Lectionary Lab Live is recorded by Two Bubbas and a Bible. We're glad that you're tuning in. Welcome, everybody, to the Lectionary Lab Live. This is a special edition, Preaching Holy Week. I'm John Fairless, and I'm here with my bubba, Delmer Chilton. Say hey, bubba.
Hey, bubba.
Man, it's good to hear from you today. We've enjoyed our new format here on the Lectionary Lab Live. We have been traveling through the season of Lent. I've enjoyed it. My preaching has benefited from the discussion. I hope a few of you out there have found it helpful. Also, let me say, we do appreciate hearing from you, and several of you have dropped us a note. That is helpful. Bubba, what we want to do today, I'm going to let you explain a little bit, because you kind of had the idea, and like we often do, I said, well, I write like that, and decided to go ahead, but we do want to talk about this wonderful, unique, but challenging opportunity we have for Holy Week. As preachers and pastors, what a great time to interpret the gospel. But boy, it can be a little tricky, and it can be busy, and it can be all kinds of other things. What are we going to try to do over the course of about the next 20 or 30 minutes?
Well, what we're going to do is kind of try to lay out thinking ahead and having a plan so that you don't get overwhelmed somewhere in the middle of Tuesday of Holy Week. 34, almost 40 years of this, I can tell you in my early years, it got busy. For a liturgical church, and particularly for a Lutheran church during Lent, there's usually a midweek devotional service you got to create something extra for, and you're trying to get ahead, and then you look out there, and there's Holy Week with Palm Sunday, Maundy Thursday, Good Friday, some churches Easter Vigil, then Easter Sunday morning, and you're going, whew, how do I get prepared
service,
for all that? Yeah, how do I get prepared for all that? Well, what you do is you think ahead, and you make it a unit. Not four separate things in my mind. I usually do four. Not exactly four separate things, but think, what do you want to communicate during that week, and sort of divide it out and not try to do everything all at one time. And I don't have one particular plan for that week, but there are options one makes based on what one wants to accomplish. And that's what I want to talk about as we walk through this week, is just thinking ahead. And so then bite chewable bites, rather than trying to swallow the whole thing all at once and getting overwhelmed, is to break it down.
I think that's the most helpful thing, as we've discussed this over the last few years. And in our previous shows, every year we'd come to this time and we'd talk something about that. But to distill it down with what you just said, number one, thinking ahead and planning ahead, because Holy Week is not immune from all of a sudden having a funeral or two, and this and that and the other gets thrown in the mix, and boy, it can really get busy when that happens. But thinking of the week and the story you're going to help the congregation engage in as a unit, not so much I got four services to plan, but how do I need to help my congregation move through this week? And if I'm going to have most of them on Palm Sunday and again on Easter, well, that's okay. You got to think of that. And who am I going to have for Maundy Thursday? Who am I going to have for Good Friday? And what do you want to cover? Divide it up and use it in your time.
Not as a lament, but as a reality. When I started years ago in rural North Carolina Lutheran parish, I could count on half a Sunday morning attendance on Maundy Thursday and a bit more than that on Good Friday. So you didn't worry about, you had a crowd on, you could divide it into four kind of equal sections. Mm-hmm. As time has gone on, you have fewer people on the midweek services, and most people don't do both Maundy Thursday and Good Friday. They do one or the other, in my experience. And so you have to judge your own congregation. But my preaching on these things has changed a little bit.
Right.
What I think of is, it's one story. You're going from Palm Sunday, the triumphal entry, to the resurrection. You have this story you're going to tell. And it's going to be in four segments, but they're not equal length segments. In terms of, you don't think of it as four breakout episodes in a serial show or a mini series. You have to say, what am I going to do? A 2-hour introductory thing, 2-hour at the end, and a couple of 15-minute things in the middle, you know, if you're thinking TV-wise.
That's it.
And so you got to think through what you're going to do. And that's what we're going to talk about now.
That's it.
All right.
All right. Okay. Well, let's do kick that off then. And with that in mind, let's begin at the beginning of this sequence. Talk about the triumphal entry. And to me, that's a great way to think about it. You can don't get distracted with, well, is it Palm Sunday? Is it Passion Sunday? Let's talk about the triumphal entry and let's work our way through.
Work our way through the gospel. Like I say, and so one of the things you can do on Palm and Passion Sunday is you got kind of three options. Okay, and I'm gonna work with it. One, you can do what you just said, the Palm Sunday, the triumphal entry, and stay with that. And not leap ahead. Just stay with the triumphal entry. Use the necessary foreshadowing that is in the text itself. But on this Sunday, celebrate the triumphal entry and what it might mean, with maybe at the end of whatever sermon you do that day, you could hint toward, but we know what's coming.
Right.
Kind of thing. Well, you know, but stay with what people are feeling, this notion of the Messiah is here, and how the various people respond. One of the things, a good preaching kind of thing, is move among the crowd almost, you know? Mm-hmm. How is this person's excited, this person's puzzled, this person, maybe a Pharisee, is worried, a Sadducee, saying this is going to upset the political thing. Somebody who works for the Romans is already sending off a message to Pilate, we got a disruption on the North Gate or whatever, you know.
Yeah, some parents are worried about their kids running around the temple, screaming and shouting and swatting each other with palm branches.
And the question is, and we wonder too, what is this? We all see it from a different angle. We all respond to Jesus' triumphal entry into life. And where is his entry? That kind of thing.
Right.
The other thing you can do with the Passion Sunday, depending on like if you don't have a Good Friday service or if it's a community one without any proclamation perhaps, and if you're saying we go from triumphal entry to resurrection and nothing about the cross, and you know, and for some of us, particularly Lutherans, that's not okay.
Yeah,
you got to deal with the cross.
You cannot cut the cross out of this story.
Yeah. So you may have to do. You may focus almost entirely on the cross and on the meaning of the cross as we come to this Sunday. You know, and that's the second reading. Mm-hmm. You know, is the cross story, and you can really focus there and almost do what you would do with a kind of a Good Friday. Focus on telling that story and the issues of the cross and explore whatever your theology of your tradition is. What the cross means, why the cross is so important, and you know that's your whatever tradition you come from, mm-hmm. or you could do, and I like this one. I've done this kind of because you've read if you do the triumphal entry, you know, reading the gospel as you come into the church, you know, and kind of reenact it as a ritual,
right?
Then you read the gospel at the time you normally read the gospel before the sermon. Then you can talk about from triumph to tragedy. The sermon becomes, how did we get from here to here?
Right, right.
Where did that go? And that's sort of the week, but, you know, we're talking, but not only the Good Friday, not the Easter Sunday. You know, you talk about, we know this is the Friday's coming kind of thing.
Yeah, Friday's coming.
And that's a sermon preaching option.
It is. Calvin Miller, Baptist preacher from I call him a half a generation before you and I, and he's deceased now, but a good writer, a good thinker, a good preacher, and I love one of his quotes. It's probably not entirely original, but he was the first one that sort of helped me see it. People are fickle.
Yeah.
The same crowd that cried Hosanna on Sunday shouts crucify him on Friday. Yeah. That kind of thing, that sort of movement, and I don't want to overdo that. I don't want to impose too much on the text. I really want to help the text form us.
Right. Right.
But I see what you're saying there. And for lots of folks, that probably is going to be an option they're going to need.
Well, and in the liturgical churches, most of us will read both these gospels.
Right.
We will read the triumphal entry on the steps of the church, everybody outside, and they have palm fronds, and we march into all glory, laud, and honor, and do all that thing. And then we do the entrance rite and read the other lessons. And then we read the gospel, which is the passion story. So if you do both of those, it's almost, you're called to at least mention both ends.
Yeah.
Depending on how you want to work with it.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Just the last thing about this, that what you choose, I think, has more to do with what you think is going to happen on Friday. On Good Friday. If you're going to have a Good Friday service that's going to be fairly well attended, then you need to spend a lot more time on the triumph and the Palm Sunday aspect of things.
Right.
And but if Good Friday is going to be your, you know, I'm jokingly saying the 12 apostles, you know, and it's going to be the organist, the choir, the lector, the ushers, and three people who have nobody to go to dinner with.
Right.
If that's what Good Friday's going to be like, then you may probably want to come down a little more on the passion story.
Yeah.
Make sure it's heard in your congregation.
And to be clear, you know, it's easy to say, well, I am going to have Good Friday, and I will have a few people there. And am I going to make them listen to this stuff twice? You know what? The folks that are there on Good Friday will be okay. They don't mind. They know they're going to be getting the story again. And this is a pastoral and preaching decision. How am I, again, go back to what are we trying to do here? How do we help as much of our congregation access this story as possible?
And also that also ties into what does Good Friday look like?
Right.
That's the other thing I wanted to say. For some people, Lutherans and Episcopalians have a Good Friday liturgy. That is a traditional thing that is full of the great litany, long prayer, and the reading of the passion story, perhaps a tenebrae where you stop and in the midst of the story and put out candles. I mean, it's a very dramatic thing that doesn't call for preaching.
Right.
You know, so if you're going to do that, this might be a thing of saying, we'll preach it on Sunday. We'll do the liturgy around it on Good Friday for whoever's there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, let's move on through the week. And again, we realize for some folks, if you, have a pretty really serious liturgical tradition, you may be having services every day. We're not trying to talk about Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday necessarily of Holy Week. There are certainly resources there for that. Let's move to what for most of us is the next major section then, and that's Maundy Thursday.
Well, again, I'm kind of laying out some of the options. And I would, in my experience, Maundy Thursday is generally better attended than Good Friday these days.
Yes.
And Maundy Thursday, and people who are going to come to a midweek service on in Lent, and particularly in traditions that don't normally have one, they're going to go to one or the other. Most people aren't going to both Maundy Thursday and Good Friday. Some churches only have the Maundy Thursday and don't do the Good Friday. And so, having said all that, Maundy Thursday, I think, is one you may want to focus a little more attention on what you're going to do and be prepared to do a sermon. There are three options here. One is to focus on the meal and the incidents going on in the meal story. That's 1 through 17 in particular. The lead up to the cross. Particularly in the what I call the left out section of 13,
right.
You know, always pay attention to what they leave out because they're trying to direct what we're thinking. But looking at left off section, I think the focus I would put here is the language from the old Lutheran words of institution, which starts in the night in which he was betrayed.
Yeah,
you know, and invites in the night in which he was betrayed, and to think of this as the night in which he was betrayed, and particularly. I think if you don't have Good Friday, you know, if you're a tradition that doesn't have a Good Friday service, you might want to kind of meld those together as this is the prelude to him going out to the cross. That's a possibility. You got Judas's betrayal that night. That's why I mentioned that. It's got Judas Iscariot already knew what was in his heart. And you see this coming.
Right.
The second one, and one that I favor a great deal on this night, is the focus on the foot washing, the mandate. Maundy Thursday comes from mandate. Mm-hmm. that we love one another, and to focus on that ritual that he did, if at all possible. I have a hard time getting people to let me wash their feet.
Let's be honest. How many folks are you eager to have come up and wash your naughty toes?
That's right. Well, that's part of the point. I had somebody a few years ago who said, well, I just decided that what we would do is we'd get sanitizer and we'd wash each other's hands. And I said, that kind of misses the point. You know, the fact that Jesus got it, you know, the very fact that we don't want to, I'm preaching now instead of, but the fact that we don't want to wash each other's feet is the point. You know, we want we don't want to show that side of ourselves. We don't want our ugly and smelly parts to be taken care of, but Jesus took care of those parts, and we're called to take care of those parts from each other, not just our Sunday best, but our Maundy, Thursday nasty feet.
There you go.
And so that's, I think that's just very powerful. And I have to say, anybody who hasn't managed to create a foot washing is missing something. Teenagers are more easily manipulated and probably have less ugly feet than most people in a youth event. This is they all sort of have that moment of I don't want to do that, but when it happens, both at what we called in Lutheran the happenings, which are Episcopal Lutheran kind of youth event, and Affirm, our summer event, a lot of them had foot washings. I have people 40 years old come up to me occasionally at Lutheran events and say, that foot washing changed my life. It was an experience that unlike any other, if you've never been a part of one.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm reflecting that the less than I can use the fingers of one hand to count the number of times I've led or participated in a foot washing, they've all been youth related.
Yeah.
And ask myself, what's the reticence with my congregation? So as a staff, and we've been talking about it, we are trying very hard and intend to include foot washing in our Maundy Thursday observation this year down at the First Baptist Church. So, you know, if y'all hear feel the continental shelf tilting down here in Florida and the water receding, it may be the reaction of
the Baptist. Well, this is one where you learn something from the TV evangelist or the tent revivalist.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to about 8 or 10 people. I learned this and persuade them to come to be a part of the foot washing.
Right.
So you know you will have a representative group. Leave it open to everybody.
Right.
But just say, if you will, and just what they know. I mean, this is the Billy Graham and all this.
Absolutely.
Somebody else going loosens the inhibition. Somebody may want to go, they just don't want to be the first.
Right.
They don't want to be the only. And
yep.
You can talk to some folks, and don't talk to them about it as like, so this way others will come, saying, we're going to have this ceremony. And I think it's important, and I think I need some people that are going to be more than willing to participate. I'll invite everybody, but I'd really like to know that you're going to do this because it's part of your leadership. You know, I talk to vestry members and council members and things, and it's helpful.
Right.
And you know, leave people open because some people just can't handle it. So you leave
That's
open
it.
The option of saying no, and you... Some people have put, I'm just being practical here, put them, quote unquote, on the stage, you know, wherever that may be. And that's a little too public. And I've always found the front pew.
Right.
It's a comfortable place. They're back, their feet, there's nobody can see in their feet but the people washing them. And it's just as effective.
That's it.
You know, it's
that's
not
it.
It's not a show.
Give it a shot.
Yeah, give it a shot.
All right.
The third one on that is my least likely, but it is. You know, we sometimes say the words of institution. This was the night the Lord's Supper was instituted. Mm-hmm. From whatever your tradition, you may want to talk about that, you know, about the Eucharist or the Lord's Supper or the memorial, however your tradition sees it.
Right.
And what it means for you, what this sacrifice Christ makes this night and how on the cross as his body is broken and the blood spilled, the disciples look back and remember what he said. This is my body. This is my blood. You look forward, you know, whatever you'd like to do. I don't think this is not a bad time to do that. And as Barney Fife said about something else, if you've done everything else about this to death, this might be a way to go. You know?
Yeah, that's it. That's it. And I don't want to overdo either the, fortunate happenstance, or just the fact that, generally speaking, our observance lines up with Passover and the Jewish connection and the Seder meal. I think that can be overdone. I think we can be a little presumptive in trying to bring too much of that in. But this is an opportunity when the Jews gathered for the meal to remember, which is basically a large part of what we're doing. I love the lead-off question, why is this night different from all others? And so there is something different here, and an opportunity to help people make that connection may well be an important part of the teaching and the experience for your congregation.
Well, this is a personal hobby horse. Don't pretend to have a Seder.
Right.
It's fine to do an element, but be real clear. This is a Christian, what we're doing is learning about the Seder so that we will understand the Eucharist, but we are not really having a Seder because we're not Jewish.
That's correct.
And we're just like, if they did what we do at communion to understand as a demonstration, that would not be taking communion because they're not Christian, you know?
That's
and,
right.
and we don't want to be offensive to their tradition. We want to be
that's open. It. Yeah. There's a way to be respectful and to seek to understand without appropriating or certainly saying, well, now we're going to do it right because we know Jesus is the Savior of the world.
And we're going to do like Savior right. We know what it really means. Don't do that.
No,
don't do that.
Bad idea. Let's move on along. Now, Good Friday.
Well, I think the best thing I can tell you about Good Friday is don't talk too much.
It's already got a lot of scripture. It's a long read.
Long readings, read the text in the midst of what a good liturgy. Look, if your tradition doesn't bring one, Book of Common Prayer is online and copyright free.
Right.
There's the Great Litany. You can look, there are various things, and read the text in the midst of singing some good, good traditional hymns, do the lessons, do a long prayer, tenebrae, putting out candles. It does its own work.
That's correct.
Not necessary. If you do want to do a meditation, if that's a strong part of your tradition, you can. I would suggest pick a small piece to meditate on. You know, we used to, when I was a Methodist student pastor, on communion Sundays, we didn't have sermons. We had communion meditations, you know, and which was a little different. I would do like 1838, Pilate says, what is truth? Got a little direction with that. Or 18:7, whom are you looking for? You know, or 18:28, the cock crowed. Little lines like that, and 5 minutes, if you got a sermon time of meditation on that, is enough.
I think your point is, this is not the time to pull out. I'd like to share with you 17 major factors that are found in the Passion of our Lord. No.
If you're going to do the 7 last words of Christ, do them week after week as your Lenten devotion, not on Good Friday.
There you go.
That's right.
I think we got it.
Yeah.
Now, carry us through. As you mentioned, some of us may touch lightly on, or may just touch on, Easter Vigil. What I think is maybe more common is certainly what we do when we have our early morning service on Easter Sunday. We begin with a hint of the Easter Vigil. The candle is unlit. It is dark. And then the light comes and we move on in. Move us now to Easter Sunday.
Well, the Easter Vigil, as you mentioned, was an old tradition that you can do. It's the old one, the oldest one, was like all night.
Right.
And you break the dawn with Eucharist. And people were baptized in the middle of the night and all that sort of thing. Current Easter Vigil can go as long as 3 hours, and it has a lot of start in the dark and outside and carry in the light and 12 lessons and from Genesis to resurrection, et cetera, et cetera. It's a beautiful service and has some nice music with it, but if you want to do that, there's no proclamation involved in that usually. And that's that in terms of, wait a minute, it's all proclamation. There's no, I wrote a sermon.
That's it. That's a good point.
That's a good point. And if that's what you do, do it well, and don't worry about trying to prepare a sermon for it.
Right.
Most of us it's a little shorter than that, maybe an hour if they do it or so. And the same thing, just do the readings, do some hymns, do the liturgy, and let it do its work. Most of us are going to maybe have an Easter sunrise and then another sermon to write for the day, two sermons. And we have a couple of optional texts. One is Luke 24, 1 through 12, the women at the tomb. And the other is John 21 through 18. Similar kind of thing, the running in and looking in and Mary talking to the gardener. I think they're there in case you have two services to preach. And I like Luke 24, 1 through 12 for Easter sunrise. Great sermon line. Why do you look for the living among the dead?
Right.
You know, I think that's a key kind of place. And again, that kind of proclamation at that time of day, most Easter sunrise services are outside. Easter is March in most of the world outside of Florida and Arizona and Southern California. It's going to be cold. They're not listening very long. So whatever you say, say it quick and say it.
Get her done, folks.
It's not a time for a long exegetical exploration of the resurrection. And I think the great sermon line, why do you look for the living among the dead, is probably
right.
And plays around with that context. Then, moving into what are your primary proclamation of the day. And for some people, I know you're going to repeat this sermon three or four times in larger churches. Probably once. I'm going to do it twice because I have two churches, and so I'll go to both. So, and I would base it on John. One of the things that struck me is playing with that sequence in verses 10 and 11, where about the women, and they considered it an idle tale.
Yeah, I love that phrase.
And don't get obsessed with the fact that it was men who thought women were telling an idle tale. Don't get off on the supposed sexism of early Judaism. That's not the point here, frankly. There was some, not as much as we've been told, but there was some. The issue is it was no more believable then than it is now.
Right.
One of the things we do is say we are modern people. We know that this is not possible. These were poor, benighted, uneducated, primitive people who would believe anything. Fact is that's a prejudice on our part.
Right.
That they did know. They knew dead people stayed dead. They knew that. And it was a miracle then as much as it's a miracle now. So do not hold your sense that the resurrection didn't happen simply on the basis that it was, we know better now. That's not the case.
Absolutely.
They knew better then. So that's a great place to kind of base something.
And I think that's an excellent entry point into this text. I remember what Bishop Julian Gordy, your bishop there in the Southeastern Synod, said as a guest on our show a couple of years ago. You know, sometimes we wring our hands as preachers on Easter. What am I going to say? Oh, yeah, everybody knows the story. How do I make it new? How do I make it fresh? And I loved Julian's, one of his answers to that dilemma. You know, most people are coming for gospel on this day. Give them gospel.
That's right.
How do we help them experience the good news? And so the challenge is still there. It does still seem like an idle tale in our society, but it did then too. They're going, are you kidding me? This stuff doesn't happen. And that's what we have the opportunity to try to help flesh out.
Well, if I may, sometimes we confuse the pulpit with the lectern. Pulpit's a place for proclamation. A lectern is a place for teaching. And some more, we need to remember we're proclaimers sometimes. That means does not mean we proclaim silly stuff.
Right.
It just means we don't have to argue people into the truth, and we can have a discussion later.
Yes.
It's time to proclaim, and that's why I said they thought it was an idle tale, but then they found out it's true. The other one piece there that I like is in John, over at John 21 through 18, 4 and 5, running and looking in. I like that kind of thing where one ran ahead but would not go in, And Peter comes later, but he's bold enough to look in. And that's a nice contrast and talk about how we respond to the news.
Right.
You know, some of us rush ahead, but then there's, where's the hesitancy? How far do we? You can play with that image of the two running, one ahead, but then stops and the other one looks in. The other is that wonderful dialogue with the angel, Mary's dialogue with the angels and the gardener, and seeing him but not knowing him. And there's all kinds of things to do with that. And where is the risen Christ in the world? And do we recognize the risen Christ? And how has the risen Christ called our name? There's all kinds of images you can play with there. Yeah. Well, one of the important things, again, is to proclaim the gospel and to use these things for, John and I both spent a little time in Nashville and learned the phrase, the hook. I don't like to have a hook. Your country song has a hook,
right?
The thing that makes it memorable, that grabs somebody. I don't think that's a good practice every week, But on these days, this is not a bad day for that. I mean, there's a lot going on Easter, lots of music and celebration. It's a festival. It's noisy. And you're not there. Just be aware that they're all children who've had too much sugar on Easter Sunday. That's how it is.
Yeah.
They rushed to get dressed and ready and probably ate pancakes and they got people coming for whatever happened.
That's it.
So proclaim it with a hook, something that a line they can walk out and say, that's what it was about. This is the day for that. And I think any of those idle tale, why are you looking for the living among the dead? Or, who is Jesus? Have you seen Jesus and didn't know him? And how did he call your name?
Well, as we've talked about, this is really one story from the triumphal entry through to the resurrection. And these are all stories about recognizing Jesus, the ways that we do or do not, how we recognize Jesus, how we see him. Tell the story. They're coming for gospel. Give them gospel. Delmer, let me work in real quick here for everybody. Some of you were listening going, boy, I was hoping I might get a few more examples or maybe, I think we've given several intriguing opportunities for the preaching during this week. But fear not, we here at the Lectionary Lab have heard your cries and actually have been working on a written resource to use, the Lectionary Lab Guide to Preaching for Holy Week. And we are going to be publishing, and looks like it's going to be maybe 10 to 12 pages worth of resources. We're going to print all of these ideas that we've talked about on the show today. We're going to help to set Holy Week as a unit and how you begin to think about dividing it, how many ever services you have. And then, of course, we're going to include some actual resources, a couple of sermons, some devotionals, some orders of worship, things like that. We will have that available. You'll find it here, a link on our lectionarylab.com website. You will also find a link on our podcast show. So check those resources. You'll be able to click, pay a small fee, and download that resource immediately. You don't have to wait for it to ship from Amazon or anywhere else. Bubba, I have enjoyed working on that, and I think it's a right helpful tool.
Yep, I think so too.
Very good. Well, thanks, everybody, for listening. Again, let us hear from you. Pick up the volume, Preaching for Holy Week. And I reckon, Bubba, there's not much else for us to do today other than to tell everybody bye.
Everybody bye.
Lectionary Lab Live is a Two Bubbas and a Bible production. Our opening theme is Crawdad Stomp by Joshua Kirsch. We go out this session with Easter Song, a classic performed by the second chapter of Acts.
They're singing, Christ is risen.